Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Goblin Queen's Fortean Furniture Outlet. Need a new armoire? Why not try this one? It's heavily discounted because it's infested with goblins, and it's got a portal in the back of it. No refunds. Thinking about remodeling? If you pay a small fee, I guarantee by the time you get home, there'll be a brand new hallway in your home where there wasn't one before. Take one of my windows. All you need to do is hang it on your wall and feast in the views of a strange realm it looks out on. Wardrobes, windows, and hallways. They all serve as openings or passageways in one way or another, whether it's literally, metaphorically, or supernaturally. Tonight, I will be reading a handful of first-hand paranormal experiences that I've collected from several different sources, and they all have a connection to one of these common components of a house or building, a closet, a window, or a corridor. I'll also go into some superstitions and symbols associated with windows, wardrobes, and hallways. Let's get to the stories, shall we? The first one is going to come from the paranormal subreddits, and it was submitted by Dr. Ope99. I remember this like it was yesterday, because it was honestly the most terrifying experience I've ever had, and I remember it so vividly that I honestly think it's impossible for it to be a dream or a hallucination. When I was around 9, I used to live in a house near the beach. I loved that house. It had a nice yard, and my grandma lived with us. Today, my aunt lives there and says nothing has happened except for things randomly falling and such. But when I lived there, my room used to be on the second floor of the house, and there was a big window in front of my bed. And this is where I heard slash saw it. I remember that I woke up, looked at the window, and there was a person grinning at me in a jester outfit, and I swear he was floating outside my window, hovering right outside, and he was tapping on the window and saying I should let him in, that we would have fun. I remember I was completely paralyzed, and then I screamed, and my mom came in, and when I told her someone was outside my window, she said that it was impossible since my room was on the second floor. This happened another 2 times on different occasions, and the 3rd and last time, my mom said she was a bit tired of it, and when she faced the window, the jester was not there, she said firmly, "Mr. Ghost, please leave. We do not want you here." And it never came back again. But I tell you, this was the most chilling experience I've ever had. I never saw it again, but it still makes my skin crawl to this day. The way it said that I should open the window and let him in. He didn't have a weird voice. He honestly sounded like a regular person, but it was horrifying. Ooh, that's creepy. Jesters are kind of like clowns, in the way that they are intended to be humorous and goofy and silly, but can easily come off as unsettling and creepy. There's also the kicker in that story of the person, the jester, whatever it was, being outside their window, which was on the second floor. That just dials up the spookiness to it, doesn't it? And rules out the possibility that it was a person just standing outside their window. So, obviously, we're starting our otherworldly house tour with windows. As I said at the start, windows, hallways, and closets are all considered ways of passage. A window may not generally be a passageway for living people, although, who hasn't had to squeeze through their window once or twice when you've locked yourself out of your house? But air and light pass through windows, and in many folk beliefs, spirits of the dead are said to make use of windows. There are so many superstitions pertaining to death and windows. opening windows when a person dies is a practice in a number of cultures and religions, the belief generally being that the person's soul or spirit may use this as a passageway to the afterlife. In some cases, coffins would be taken out of a house through windows rather than doorways, as it was said to confuse the spirit and make it unable to re-enter the house and haunt it, and to prevent doorways becoming cursed or contaminated by untimely or misfortune and deaths, and then pass along the curse to others who come through that threshold. Any bird or bat hitting the window of a house was said to be a death omen for someone inside. And speaking of crawling in through your window, according to one English superstition, after you crawl in through your window, you should go to your front door, open it, go back to the window and crawl out again, and then walk in through your now unlocked front door, or else you'll have bad luck. Let's read our next story concerning windows. This one is from Your Ghost Stories. It was submitted by Silverio Sanchez, took place in Washington State, and it's called Demonic Entity Outside My Window. In 2004, on October 31st, I witnessed a very disturbing image that still haunts me even now that I'm over 25 years old. I was 9 years old at the time, and on that day, I spent the entire time at home with the whole family watching movies and eating chocolate candy. We never really celebrated Halloween, not because of our beliefs, nor the fact that Halloween was a scary holiday, but rather the fact that my parents never understood the reason why people would waste money on costumes or risk us children getting into an accident. Throughout the day, we just decided to watch a few films that we had rented in order to spend the night with the family. As a young child, I always had a passion for drawing, so I always carried a sketchbook with me everywhere I went. That night as we watched movies, I began to doze off and had the desire to draw rather than watch the movie. My sketchbook was on my bed in my room. As I walked towards my room, I opened the door and entered. The lights were off and my bedroom window was open. I looked to my right to turn on the lights, but as I did, I could not help notice the disturbing image outside my window. What I saw was the head of a pig, but not any ordinary pig. The flesh seemed to be beaten very badly, the snout ripped apart, the left eye gouged out, and the ears ripped off. The only detail that really stood out was its red glowing eye. As I stood there for a few moments, staring, I could not move, as if I was paralyzed. I wanted to walk out of the room as quickly as possible, but I was frozen with fear. Years later, I tried to search for more cases relating to the supernatural involving bodiless pigs. I never really found any sources relating to my experience until I heard the case of the Amityville haunting. Long story short, the young boy who experienced the strange phenomenon at the Amityville house also witnessed a disembodied pig outside his window. After all my research and wanting to understand, I finally came to an understanding that things are better left alone than explained. To this day, there is still paranormal activity in my home, and my family and I have become used to the phenomenon. About a year ago, I ran into the family who lived on our property before my parents purchased the house in 1996. As we talked about the experiences that my family and I have encountered over the years, the father of the family did not seem very surprised. As I explained the disembodied pig apparition, he also talked about his experience witnessing the same pig head outside his window. I understand I was only 9 years old when I saw this demonic entity outside my window, and it could have simply been my imagination. But what a coincidence that the family before us who lived on the same property witnessed the exact same image outside their window. That is a really, really creepy story. It's quite a disturbing image that the witness, Silverio, saw in the window. Now, they did say it took place on Halloween night, so perhaps you'll think that it could be a costume or a mask worn by someone going about their Halloween mischief. A couple people do inquire about this in the comments section under the story. And while the witness admits the same thought came to them as well, they do believe that it was not someone in a costume, as they said they couldn't really make sense of what someone would be doing out there. They also mention in their story that they later read The Amityville Horror, in which a demonic pig is also mentioned. And it's true, in the book there are some vague mentions of some sort of apparition seen by Missy Lutz, the daughter of the family, who were featured in the book by Jay Anson, which you probably know is a novelization of allegedly true paranormal claims experienced by a family living in a house that was the scene of a very real murder case. Missy mentions a friend of hers named Jody, who she describes as an enormous pig who nobody can see but her, except when her father catches a glimpse of his red eyes glaring in through Missy's window. Now, if you know anything about the Amityville Horror, you know that it's very controversial. There is a lot of dispute as to whether or not the paranormal claims made by the Lutz family were genuine. Although I think they did maintain their claims. I don't think they ever came out and said that they made anything up. Anyway, my point is it may not be the most reliable source of reference for other instances of floating demonic pig heads, but that's definitely not to say there aren't others. There is another one even in this story. Silverio said that the previous owner of the house also admitted to seeing this disturbing pig entity. But I have found other stories of pig men or humanoid beings with pig heads as well. That's something we will probably examine another time because I have a little list going of all the different pig men kind of legends and things queued up. So I will probably do a video dedicated just to pig entities at some point. Let me know if you know of any or have any, because I will definitely add it to the list. This is something I've said before, but there is something about the idea of seeing a face or an entity or something outside your window when you aren't expecting it, especially at nighttime, that really shatters, pun intended, the safety we get from being indoors, especially our homes. It's very alarming. I have a lot of sympathy for anybody who does see something outside of their window, especially if it looks like the image in this story. So we're not done with creepy beings lurking outside of windows. So let's press on. Next, we are going to hop on over to the fairy census. This story was posted in the first fairy census, which is from 2017. Very briefly, the fairy census is a collection of anonymous, submitted, true, first-hand experiences with, you can download it online for free as a PDF. You can submit to it still. They're still being collected. So if you've had an experience with a fairy, consider submitting it for research purposes and just tell your story if you want to. I will have links in my description of where you can read the fairy census, submit to the fairy census. Anyway, this story took place in Massachusetts sometime in the 2010s, so between 2010 and 2020. The witness was in their 20s at the time this happened, and the time was between 9 p.m. and 12 a.m. My fiancé and I were in our bedroom, just relaxing for the night. I was sitting on the end of our bed, and my fiancé was next to me. The whole week, we had heard weird noises outside our house at night, as did my fiancé's mother, who lives upstairs. They seemed to be weird animal noises, though when we went outside, we couldn't find anything. Anyway, I was playing around on my phone when I heard a knock on the window, as if a small bird or bat flew into it. I approached the window, and I saw something strange. My fiancé saw it momentarily before it just vanished. It appeared to me like a small person, no more than anywhere from 2 to 5 inches in height, and it looked very shriveled and mummy-like. I often think about it and bring it up to my fiancé, and to this day, he just changes the subject. So, they said that this being, they think it either flew into the window or tapped on it, and they said it looked almost like a small, dark, kind of mummified person, almost of evil nature. It was a small humanoid with wings, and the wings were dragonfly-like. And that is something that you hear about with fairies. If they have wings, a lot of times they'll have these dragonfly wings. The Very Senses has a question that you can answer that is, what are fairies? And the witness to this story writes that fairies are supernatural beings of nature or evil. And they could be both. A lot of people think that they are nature spirits who do evil things. You know, I don't really think that fairies are good or evil. They might do things that we consider evil, but I think fairies are kind of like cats in more ways than one. But when it comes to morals, I don't think fairies have morals. I think morals are a human construct. They're like cats. You know, they're not worried about the effect it would have on somebody else, their actions. They just act. But obviously, I don't know. I'm just speculating. The witness also says that they're just puzzled and they want to know more. I can't blame them. I do think it's interesting that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about superstitions and windows that it is a omen, a bad omen, possibly a death omen, when a bat or a bird flies into your window. And they likened the sound, when they first heard the sound that this being made on the window, they thought that it was a bird or a bat hitting their window. So that's kind of interesting that that was brought up. I don't think it was a death omen though, because as far as I know, everyone seems, well, I don't know. They didn't mention, you know, the event took place years before they submitted this story. And they didn't mention the immediate death of anyone after this, which I think they probably would. Also, it wasn't a bird or a bat. It was a little mummified fairy person. So, very, very interesting story. I'm going to read some more from the Very Senses. I'm actually going to read a lot from the Very Senses. The majority, if not all of the stories I'm going to read for the remainder, are from the Very Senses. So, let's move on to our next story. This story took place in Queensland, Australia, in the 1980s, when the witness was between the ages of 11 and 20. It was in December or January that the incident happened. I believe it was either late afternoon or early evening. It was very cloudy, and I think there had been a thunderstorm. The sky was very dark. I looked out my bedroom window and saw a being made of light. I recall it being female and hovering. I climbed out the window, and I remember I could smell rain and feel it spitting. I went towards the being and reached out to hold her hand. I remember it felt like I was next to a fire. The parts of my body that were close to her were very warm, while the other side of me was chilly. Just before my hand touched her, my memory of the event ends quite abruptly. I think that is a really beautiful story. There's definitely something very symbolic about the witness climbing through their window to meet with this being. It's like leaving one world to enter another. It reminds me of, I remember at least one guest on Otherworld podcast describing their astral projection experiences, and they said that they would go to sleep and wake up, as it were, in a dream or astral version of their bedroom. And when they crawled out of their window, that's when they felt they were making passage into another plane, or kind of an in-between place, because I think they said they, at that point, when they left their window, there were other windows that they could crawl into to go to different places. If I remember correctly, I think that was the birthing tent episode of Otherworld, which might be my favorite one. Definitely recommend listening to it if you have not. That show has some really amazing guests. Anyway, concerning the story we just read, there are some additional comments in the report that I'd like to share. First, a few details about the fairy's appearance. They said she was humanoid and made of light. She faced me, so I couldn't see if there were wings or not. In response to the question, what makes you think this was a fairy experience, as opposed to a ghost, alien, angel, or something else? The witness says, I named the experience fairy at the time that it occurred. When asked, what are fairies? They say, fairies probably do not exist. I found that to be an interesting response from someone who submitted an account to the fairy census, but they do go on to elaborate a bit more. I suffered a head injury earlier in the same year and have since had experiences of lost time, visual, auditory, tactile, and smell/taste hallucinations. EEG tests show that I have anomalies in my right temporal lobe that mirror the left temporal lobe. So it sounds like they may be dismissing the experience as being caused by head injury, or just maybe using that as an explanation for the experience. Maybe not dismissing it per se. So it's interesting that they decided to submit this experience to the fairy census, which would lead you to believe that they think it's real, since that's the point of the fairy census. They did tick off that they have unusually vivid memories of the experience. It kind of just makes my mind go down the rabbit hole of wanting to argue what's real and what's not, and my interpretation of this account, because that's all I can do. I can't talk to this individual. I can only just interpret the little bit that they put in the census. My interpretation of this account leads me to a kind of gray area between the two, what's real and what's not. Some people might quantify things as being real if they can touch them or see them. You hear that so much when it comes to supernatural phenomenon, right? I need to see it to believe it. Well, this person saw and touched this fairy, but still came to the conclusion that fairies probably aren't real. Isn't that interesting? And I would also make an argument that experiencing something to this degree, where it involved basically all of your physical senses and had a lasting, vivid imprint on you, is real, no matter what. For example, when it comes to near-death experiences, many people report these vivid experiences when they are in near-death situations, and they see and touch people and feel these palpable sensations and this and that. But a lot of people argue against those kind of stories and say, oh, this is a result of electrical or chemical behavior of the brain when it's dying, and so on. And I don't think we really know what happens for sure either way, but the point is that the person who had the near-death experience is the person who had the experience and was emotionally impacted by it and shifted their perspective upon revival and probably marked a turning point in their life. So to them, it's real. You know, I mentioned Otherworld earlier. There's several guests who describe their near-death experiences and, you know, they see it as a very real experience. That's why I think you should never put down someone who is sharing an experience they genuinely believe they had. Obviously, if someone's lying, that's a different story. But if someone's sharing a genuine experience, regardless of what you think, and it's normal to have doubts and to question things, especially things we don't understand or haven't experienced ourselves, it's never encouraging to have someone tell you that something you experienced, terrifying, profound, beautiful, or just bizarre, didn't happen or isn't real. So if you are in the presence of someone relating this type of story, I would probably just keep those kind of opinions to yourself. Unless they solicit, you know, your opinion. What do you think this is? I'm looking for an explanation. That's a different story. But if someone just really needs to tell their story, I probably, you know, would think about not just totally dismissing it. Anyway, I will cap my thoughts for now. I have even more about what came up for me when reading this small, little, somewhat vague account. It just really brought up a lot of interesting thoughts for me. So, I could go on and on about my personal musings on the nature of reality, but I will cap it there for now, and we can get back to reading stories. Let's shut the window for now and travel down a dark corridor and see what awaits us. This next story from the fairy census also took place in Australia, but in Sydney. It took place in the 1990s when the witness was under the age of 10 and the time was between midnight and 3 a.m. I was 8 years old and losing my teeth. I believe that I saw the tooth fairy, but I feel that she may be one of many. I had lost a tooth and kept it in my special tooth holder. Usually my parents would swap it for a dollar coin. That night, I woke to see a full, human-sized, glittery, and flowing woman with blonde hair, a crown, and a sparkly pale blue dress float past my bedroom door down the hallway. I slept with my bedroom door open until I was 12. I don't know why I woke up at that moment, but I did. She did not react, but disappeared down the hall. Looking back now, she looked a lot like Walt Disney's Cinderella, but real and glittery. She lit up the hall with a luminous blue. I definitely was not dreaming, nor was I scared. I didn't even believe it to be a big deal until the next morning, when I received not just a dollar coin in the tooth holder, but a sparkly purple and blue fairy princess-themed Polly Pocket, which was my favorite toy growing up, wrapped in a sparkly paper. My mom swore she didn't know where it came from, but was quick to dispose of the wrapping and note attached. All I have is the Polly Pocket, and she won't talk about it. The witness describes the fairy as adult-sized, blonde hair, sparkly, luminous, big dress. When asked, why was she a fairy, and not something else, she says, because she was the tooth fairy. She came the night I lost my tooth and left me a special present. When asked, what are fairies? She says, I think they are old creatures who exist in another dimension on our planet. They have harmony with nature in remote places. They could have links to disappearances in national parks, etc. For example, I believe they may have something to do with the missing 411. Wow, so the tooth fairy is real. How much did you all get for your teeth when you were a kid? I think I would get a quarter, I want to say, for my teeth when I lost them and exchanged them. One of the interesting things you'll find if you go through the reports in the fairy census is that experiences involving these Disney-esque fairy tale type of fairy are getting reported less and less. If you ask the average person how they picture a fairy, they'd probably describe something similar to the being in this story, or a little winged Tinkerbell type creature. And while there are still some of those reported to the fairy census, a lot of them resemble more of a folkloric type of fairy, which aren't as cute. They're more earthy and can be quite creepy. There's definitely something quite magical and ethereal about this story. So, the fairy was seen floating down the hallway. Hallways, naturally, are a liminal space. It's a twixt-in-tween place, an interspace between rooms and destinations. While quite literally a passageway, they are also symbolically reminiscent of the original passageway we all travel into life, the birth canal. A psychoanalytical or dream interpretation would liken a hallway to a womb or a transition, since a hallway puts you traversing from one place or situation to another. Or maybe you are traveling deeper into yourself, into your subconscious mind. It's said that dreaming of going down a long hallway can represent subconscious worry. I think there's a reason that all that liminal space media, particularly the back rooms, was so popular in the several years past from when I'm recording this. There's a reason that all of that imagery was so compelling and creepy to such a vast number of people. The images of dark, seemingly unending corridors gives us a feeling of being very unsettled. Could be because it puts you in that between place, that corridor. I actually very often have dreams of corridors and hallways, usually like an old school hallway or some sort of building, but just walking and turning and traversing down very long hallways. I have those a lot. Also, at the very end of their story, the witness mentioned how they believe that fairies could be connected to missing 411. I'm sure many of you are familiar with missing 411, and I'll admit that while I'm aware of it and what it is, I haven't actually sought out any of the books or documentaries or anything. But I think it's interesting that they think that fairies are involved in missing persons in national parks, because I think a lot of folklore would align with that idea. Let's read another story from the fairy census. This one took place in Tennessee, sometime between the year 2000 and 2010, when the witness was between the ages of 11 and 20. The time was somewhere between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. Once when I was about 17 years old, I was crossing the hall from my bedroom to the bathroom, and just as I was crossing the threshold, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, down near the floor, up against the outer-facing doorframe of the bathroom. I immediately stepped backwards into the hall to do a double take. What I had seen appeared to be a very small, older man, maybe a foot high. He had nutmeg-colored skin, very squat body shape. His clothes were nondescript, but in shades of deep browns and mossy greens. He had a hat of some sort on, I believe. But he had his head tilted back as he was peering up at me, just watching. Never said a word or even moved, just stood there. When I had stepped back into the hall for the double take, he was gone. This was the impression I had gotten of him in the brief moment it took me to cross the threshold into the bathroom from the hallway, and I seemed to only glimpse him just as I was stepping into the bathroom, not while approaching. This happened during the day, midday, though I don't recall exactly what time. The hallway was lit only by the large window in my bedroom behind me, as well as the smaller window in the bathroom in front of me, and whatever natural light was coming in from the dining room French doors at the end of the hall to the right of me. Not terribly dark, but not well lit. This was the first and only time I'd seen this figure or anything else like it. I did not feel scared, just surprised, curious, and a bit bewildered. I initially did question what I had seen, and if it had been real. But now it's been roughly 15 years since I saw it, and it's never left my mind, and I still remember the incident very clearly, though his image, unfortunately, seems to be fading in my memory. But I believe that what I saw was very real, especially because that memory has never left me. My mother claims she has seen him once too, in that same house, but couldn't remember how or when. Seems to have been around the same period of time. While our house was in a suburban area, we lived next to a large field that has a lot of trees around it and very nearby to a running creek which empties into a lake. I periodically would also see small balls of glowing golden or white light fly past me in the bedroom out of the corners of my eyes, and once heard what sounded like a woman sighing once or twice just outside of my one-story bedroom window. At that time, I was in my late teens and very much interested in fairy lore, though I had grown up always having an interest in fairy tales and had been reading them since I was a small child. I was also getting my feet wet in my growing interest in paganism, though I did not yet practice. I don't know if the creature I saw was a gnome or a house brownie or what, but I do believe he was a fairy and that he meant no harm. He was roughly a foot tall in height, with a squat, thick figure and nutmeg-colored skin. He was wearing nondescript clothing in deep browns and mossy green shades and a shapeless hat. He looked very solid and real. I think this creature was a fairy because he matches the descriptions of various fairy creatures, and the feeling I had afterward was that this was fairy. I believe fairies are creatures or spirits of nature and magic, both benevolent and malevolent. While I do have a vivid imagination, I am an artist and so can and do visualize very easily and clearly, but I am not, nor have ever, been given to random visions or images like this while awake. Now, this is the type of being I was talking about when I mentioned earthy, folkloric fairies. Very kind of like a Brian Froud illustration. Personally, I prefer these types to the Tinkerbell or princessy fairies that have become stereotypical in pop culture. So, not only was the witness in the hallway when they saw the little man, but quite literally on a threshold, and the fairy was standing at the border of that threshold. They really specified that they only saw the fairy when they were passing through the doorway to go to the bathroom. They didn't see it walking up, only as they were stepping through. So, a lot of twixt and tween happening here. And if we are thinking metaphorically, this could provide potential for seeing things from, well, other dimensions. In an airport terminal, you'll see people from all different places passing through to travel to other destinations. Perhaps a corridor could act in the same way, not only serving as a literal passageway for physical reality, but also a metaphysical one for other beings passing by on the borders of our perception. And they mentioned a window too. They reported hearing a woman sighing outside of their window a couple of times. So we got kind of a two-for-one, a hallway and a window mention. They also mentioned seeing balls of light on occasion. And balls of light are something that I've become increasingly interested in. I'll admit that I wasn't interested in them. I would kind of write them off as not really being significant. I just, you know, it made me think of, it kind of made me think of orbs when it comes to paranormal photography. You know, orbs are something that, unfortunately, you can't really take seriously in a photograph because it could be so many other things. It could be dust. It could be a bug. So I guess when I heard of balls of light initially, you know, like spook lights and stuff, it didn't interest me that much. I didn't think it was kind of a concrete phenomenon, but now as I read more and more, I just find that there's so much overlap. Like, balls of light come up with fairies, balls of light come up with ghosts and hauntings, balls of light come up in UFOs, and even Bigfoot. So I'm getting more and more interested in them, for sure. Our next story takes place in Oregon, also from the fairy census. This took place in the 1970s, when the witness was under the age of 10, and the time was between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. When I was about 3 years old, I was at home with my family, and we were watching the Mighty Joe Young movie on TV. I got a little overexcited by it, and got really loud and disruptive, and I wouldn't listen when my parents told me to be quiet, so I was punished and sent to my room. When my parents put me in my room, they shut the lights off and closed the door and told me to be quiet. While I was sitting there on my bed, I saw a light appear in my closet, and a caravan of small men and women that were only a couple of inches tall began walking out of the closet in a single file line. They had little wagons, and some of them were carrying lamps. They were dressed in green and brown, and the men had little hats. I watched them crossing the room and head to the wall under my bed. I got freaked out by the little men and ran out of my room to tell my parents about them. They didn't believe me, but I finally convinced them to come look. They checked my closet and my bed, but didn't see anything, so they got mad and told me to be quiet and quit lying and left the room. As soon as they were gone, I started seeing the lights and the caravan again. I watched for a few minutes, then ran to the door to tell my parents the little men were back. My dad came back and was really mad this time that I kept leaving my room and lying to try and get out of my punishment. He duct taped my mouth shut as well as my hands and feet and tossed me on the bed. Within a few seconds after he left, the little people appeared again, but this time some of them climbed up on the bed to check me out. The men were accompanied by a couple female flying fairies. I just laid there terrified while they were checking me out. They seemed really interested in my face, and some of them were tugging at the tape over my mouth, while the others were playing with my eyelashes and hair. They didn't seem hostile, just curious. Still, I was scared, and started crying and wishing they would go away. I finally closed my eyes, so I wouldn't see them anymore. After a few minutes, they left me alone. I finally worked my way out of the duct tape, and looked over the edge of the bed to see what the little men were doing, and they were gone. There were multiple beings involved, and were clearly physical beings. They appeared to be on a migration, and were carrying items in their wagons. Their size was small, and were more consistent with fairy beings than anything else. I believe fairies are another species that live on this planet. First off, it goes without saying that the treatment of the child in this story was absolutely terrible. Just awful and unacceptable. But what they saw trooping out of their closet is quite remarkable. The fairies reappeared 2 times after the witness fled the room upon seeing them, and they even interacted with him, touching his face and his eyelashes. Very interesting, although I would think, also quite scary. It's become a common trope that monsters dwell in the closet and wait to emerge when the lights were off. While it's obvious that modern children come to believe this because it's so heavily established in media and popular culture, I do have to wonder when this notion started. Is it just the mind of a child and the emotional unease some may feel on being separated at night from their parents and subsequently misinterpreting shapes and forms in the dim light of a closet? Was this fear brought on by parents and caretakers who told children tales of fiends lurking within wardrobes who feasted on little ones who didn't go to sleep when they were supposed to? One hopes we have come farther along than disciplinary tactics such as that, as well as the methods used in this report. I found this little analysis of the closet monster from the Nightmare Encyclopedia by Jeff Ballinger interesting. It says, in 2001, Disney Pixar launched the animated movie Monsters, Inc., which took the concept of the closet monster to an entirely different level. In Monsters, Inc., monsters enter the world of sleeping children via their closet door. They need to scare children and collect their screams in order to power the monster cities back home. Like real parents, the parents in the movie assume that their screaming children are having a nightmare and never believe that a real monster came calling. Monsters, Inc. isn't the only piece of fiction to turn a closet into a portal to another world. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, of course, does this as well. And there's an episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark? And I'm sure there's more that I'm unaware of. I do think it's interesting that all of those are children's media. I suppose they are playing on the fears and associations children have with closets, but maybe there's something to it. Closets represent hidden things. Skeletons in the closet, coming out of the closet. These phrases all indicate that something is being concealed. Plenty of adults still find closets to be unsettling. There's just something about them. And whether it's socially instilled in us or something subconsciously uncanny, I'm not sure. Could be both. The next couple stories concern wardrobes, which aren't quite the same as closets, but they serve the same purpose, more or less, and there are just as many odd things lurking within them. We're taking a brief break from the fairy census to read a story from the February 2016 issue of Fortean Times magazine. There's a running segment called It Happened to Me, which includes firsthand accounts submitted to the magazine's online forum. This story was submitted by Michaela Peterson, and it's called Through the Wardrobe. Back in 1998, when I was 7 or 8 years old, my family and I lived in a Victorian building called the Old Rectory in Feltwell, Norfolk. At the time, it had been converted into cheap flats, although I believe it has since been refurbished. We had been living there just shy of a year, and I was asleep on the top of a bunk bed that I shared with my older sister. I've always been a very heavy sleeper, and this night was no different. But I found myself waking suddenly, with a feeling that someone was in the room. I sat upright and looked ahead at a built-in wardrobe at the end of the room, just as a man walked through it, past where my sister and I were, and directly through the closed door on the left-hand side. This all happened very quickly, and I was so shocked and scared that I found myself unable to cry out until he reappeared, walking through the door directly at us, but as though we weren't there, and began to walk through the bunk bed at pillow height. I remember very vividly seeing the top of the man's head in my pillow, realized that he must be walking through my sister's head, and began screaming hysterically. My sister dived out of bed and hit the light switch, at which point everything returned to normal. I remember being physically aware of a kind of mental snap at the point it all ended. Naturally, my parents ran in to comfort me. My mother had many experiences of similar events as a child, and was therefore quite sympathetic. We moved not long afterwards. This event has stayed with me ever since, and I find myself going through phases of certainty that I'd seen a ghost, to questioning whether I had actually suffered a night terror. I am sure I'd never seen the man before. He He was in his mid-20s, wearing a pinstripe suit, but with unusually untidy hair, considering how well-dressed he appeared to be. Have any other readers had strange experiences relating to this building or the village of Feltwell? Very spooky. I definitely empathize with one of their closing statements that they find themselves going through phases of certainty that they had seen a ghost to questioning whether or not it was just a dream or something. I have definitely gone through similar questioning of a lot of the experiences I had as a kid, just questioning myself, especially since it's something that happened when I was so much younger. Something about the passage of time in between can just made me second guess myself. So, the witness asks at the end if anyone else has had any strange experiences in this house, which is a historic property, or in the Norfolk village of Feltwell. And I did find a few mentions of ghosts and hauntings in Feltwell. One from the paranormal database mentions the ghost of a murderous man named Dowser, or Dozer, who haunts a local peat fen. Feltwell.net mentions a woman in black who appears at night, said to be the ghost of an odd local woman who died nearly 100 years ago, named Mary B. Much respect to all of our local odd women out there. This page also says that the road that the old rectory, the house in the story, is on, which is called Lodge Road, is rumored to be haunted by a phantom horse and carriage pulled by headless horses that drives down the road past the old rectory in the dead of night. Love that one. This website also has lots of old photos of the old rectory and the former rector and his wife. They're pretty cool. Old photographs. So, in the story, Michaela mentions that after she had seen the apparition of the man who had come from the closet and screamed, her mother actually comforted her and was understanding because she had apparently had her own experiences growing up. What's very interesting is that while I was looking into possible ghost lore for the area, I found a segment of a book by Dr. Paul Lee called The Ghost of King's Lynn and West Norfolk, which is told from Michaela's mother's, Amanda's, point of view. So Amanda describes hearing her child scream at 2 a.m. one night. When she rushed into the bedroom, her youngest child said she had seen a man in their room, while her eldest child hadn't seen anything and was only awoken because of her sister's screams and was quite annoyed as well. The eldest child went back to bed while the younger, being Michaela, quote, was trembling in fright, and the next day Amanda phoned her school, excusing her absence on the grounds that she was sick. Eventually, the child was given paper and pens to draw what she had seen, but struggled to depict the intruder. When Amanda saw the finished version, it seemed to show a man in a pinstriped suit. He had black hair parted down the middle and had a white towel over his arm. It seemed to be a sketch of a butler or a servant. The encounter had a lasting effect on the unfortunate child, and she was described as jumpy, reacting to everything, including a reflection of her doll in frosted glass. This was to be her first instance of night terrors, and she still talks about the incident to this day. Indeed she does. I found this because the author of the book, Dr. Paul Lee, wrote on the Fortean Times forum upon seeing Michaela's story in the magazine, and he instantly recognized it as the same story he had heard from her mother when doing research for his book. It's pretty cool to hear the story from two different points of view and having all the details match up. The pinstripe suit. Michaela mentioned that she thought it might have been night terrors, and night terrors come up. Very interesting. Lee's book was published in 2023, and he had no idea about the 2016 Fortean Times version of Michaela's story. Apparently, Amanda also had her own odd experiences at the old rectory, such as creaking floorboards and possible apparition of a man who she mistook for a guest of an upstairs neighbor, but whom they later denied having any knowledge of. She said her upstairs neighbors were having a party, and she went outside for something and noticed a man leaning against the wall, standing outside, and she even, I think, struck up a conversation with him. She just figured he was a guest of her neighbors since they were having a party. But she noticed that he was dressed very oddly, and so later she asked her neighbors about him, and they didn't know who she was talking about. You know, she described him, and they didn't know such a person in such odd attire. The author of the book, Paul Lee, also found a few other former residents of the old rectory who had ghostly experiences, and even the current owner apparently admitted to hearing the sounds of footsteps and children laughing. I must say, I like the idea of living in an old haunted Victorian rectory, but I don't know if I'd actually like it and be able to put up with all the odd activity. All right, so we are going back to the fairy census for our final story of the night. It's brief, but very interesting. It took place in Devon, England in the 1990s, when the witness was under the age of 10. The time was between 12 a.m. and 3 a.m. Whilst in bed as a child, I was awoken on several occasions over several years to see what I described then as little nasty wolves coming out of an antique wood wardrobe. After drawing them for my mother, which I remember very clearly, I can now say they looked more like fairies. Very, very short story, but very strange. First, they describe little nasty wolves coming out of an antique wardrobe. And I just pictured a bunch of little tiny wolves spilling out of a wardrobe and running around along a bedroom floor, which is honestly kind of cute to think about. But then they say that after drawing what they saw for their mother, they decided that they looked more like fairies. And I couldn't help but find myself wondering, how does that work? I'm really curious how the transformation from little nasty wolves to fairy plays out. So they give the description of the beings as such. Small men with lots of hair in brown suits, almost dirty looking, like miners. They always looked nasty. So maybe they thought of them as wolves at first because they were covered in hair or had lots of hair on them. Maybe that made them look like werewolves or something? Maybe somewhere between wolves and men? I don't know. That's really all we have to work with. So it's a very strange little account, but one I really like. Sometimes it's the short, vague stories that are more intriguing because, I don't know, maybe because there's more to speculate on, but I do really like that story. Their final remarks are in response to the question, what are fairies? Their answer is elemental creatures sent to protect nature. Well, I hope you enjoyed the stories tonight. We all interact with windows, hallways, and closets every day to the point that they're mundane. But the strangest things can happen in the most ordinary places. I'm thinking this will be part one of a series, dissection of a haunted house, or something like that. And it's something I'm going to pick back up on later. In other shows, we'll focus on other rooms, elements, probably more furniture, of houses. So, there will be a return trip to my Fortean furniture outlet. But for now, thank you so much for stopping by, and I'll see you next time. Good night.